I noticed that females always struggled to find that balance when it comes to home and work life. Every time there was some, mostly the females were the ones that had to stay home when, if a kid was sick, dog was sick, whatever it was the female that had to sacrifice her job.
If you got value from this episode, you might consider sharing this content with a friend. But most importantly, be sure to take action on what you've learned. One way you can take the next step is to connect directly with Socket on an investor call. That link is waiting for you in the show notes below.
Welcome back, my Great to Wealth listeners. Do I have a treat for you today? I'm going to be speaking with a person who I've started to think of as a friend now, because every time I think about her, Knessa Mullane, it brings a smile to my face, not because of any other reason, but because of her story, right? She is, if I think about it, very inspiring story. I'll give a very quick glimpse of the story, and then we'll go to details as we always do. Story began as an Ethiopian refugee to being the first female American Football League in Europe. And then started a sports brand and now have a very successful clothing line called Mulu for plus size retail clothing. And she's in Dubai right now. So, of course, a world traveler. I could say that the person who's living the theme of our show, which is migrate to wealth, has been redefining the term wealth on a consistent basis and then migrating into wealth on a consistent basis. And I don't think the migration journey has ended. This migration has only begun. I feel by talking to Knessa, you'll feel the energy and the passion there as well. Make some notes. Be ready to be inspired. If you're driving, I would say for this episode, you want to pause. Be in a place where you may get so inspired that you want to take an action, and you want to be in a place where you want to make sure that you're safe and comfortable. With that, Knessa, welcome to the show.
Thank you. That's a great introduction.
Yeah, I usually don't introduce, but I couldn't stop introducing you, audience, before the show because they need to know who they're listening to at a very, very abstract level. So, Kanessa,
No,
let's.
I love it. I love it.
That's
You know, the
awesome.
hardest question mostly is when people ask you to introduce yourself, but you did it. So you took that off my plate.
Love that. Knessa, so what we always open the show with one question. It's actually my favorite question now. One of the few favorite questions. One is, when you heard the term migrate to wealth, what was going through your head?
So many things actually, because it's like migrate. Is it like a shift from immigration lifestyle to a wealthy lifestyle? And then there was like, is it something like, going from a 9-to-5 job to wealth? It was just so many questions.
Love that. Questions are great because if you're asking question, you mean that means you're looking. If you're not asking question, that means you're not living. So I tell my girls, I have two girls, 8 and 9 year old, I always 8 and 10. I always tell them that the best thing you can do to yourself is to ask question, because if you're asking question is when you're really learning. Otherwise, you're just living, and who wants to just live? We want to thrive and shine. So perfect. So Knessa, tell us about your journey, especially as an Ethiopian refugee, to then being in the fashion industry and being the first woman of color, and I won't give it away, to run a very prominent fashion show in Dubai as well. So give us that journey of how did that start? Give us the elements of what made you make some of these key decisions.
You know, it's actually funny looking back. I always knew that there was something big waiting for me. And honestly, I still feel that. So I'm sure I'm not at the end of, that adventure. So I always knew that there's so much more than what I had. And believe me, what we had, meaning me and my parents, or my parents and I, is how you say it's not, it wasn't much. It's still not much. It's more than we, had, but I just feel that there is still more out there. I just believed in myself, and I just believe that, it's actually interesting because for my parents, they dreamed, when they fled the country, their home, they just wanted me to have a good life, whatever that meant for them. And I assumed that meant, just have a stable life where you don't have to worry about your safety, having food, having, on the table, or having anything when it comes to the basics of life. That was their dream life for me. But, my parents went through the trauma for me in order, you know, for me to have the opportunities that I had, if that makes sense. They actually were the ones that had to go through the difficult times. I you know, looking back, being an immigrant child is way different than being the immigrant itself. Hope that makes sense.
Tell me more about it. Let's go deeper in that, because I think there's something there. Let's go deeper into that.
Yeah, I think, you know, now as an adult, I can understand where my parents, or what they went through.
Right.
I can understand, but I did not live it. I was just there, you know. I knew that I was dealing with two worlds, because behind closed doors, I was basically living the Ethiopian lifestyle.
Right.
And outside that door, it was the European, because I grew up in Holland, in Netherlands. So I was living that lifestyle that all my friends in my class were living. I was trying to keep up with two worlds here. I thought that was normal. I thought everyone was doing that, going through that. And I, at some point, I think at teenage, when I was, maybe teenage life, that's when it started. At least that's when I started to realize that, okay, this isn't normal. You know, my life, you know, inside and outside that house was so extremely different, but I had nobody to talk to, because my parents were just like, hey, you have to be grateful. That's it. Do you know what we've given you? And that's basically the end of every conversation when I tried to talk about every, you know, thing that I see outside that house.
Correct.
So they'll just close it by saying, like, you know what, we came here for you. You just make sure that, you know, you make us proud, and that's it. That's all we ask you to do. As if it was just
easy.
You know, as if it was easy. But I get it from there. Now that I'm an adult, I get it. I get what they're saying. They went through so much more, you know, in order to just provide a better life. So I think it was also not desperate, but it was just that a drive. Like,
Definitely.
All this.
Definitely.
My mom always told me, like, I wouldn't, you know, if I had a choice, I would never go to Europe. My home is still in Ethiopia. And I think my dad secretly thinks or feels the same, but he doesn't want to admit that. So I think they just lost part of themselves in order to, you know, give me a better life. Yeah, I think it must be hard for them as well. So whatever I was telling them, or I was, you know, whatever complaint I had, it was peanuts compared to their mental suffering.
That is so true, Kanessa. And I think when you're an immigrant refugee, I'm sure very different. I was just kind of put myself in their shoes. I came here with a job to the U.S. from India. I came with a job where I knew what I was going to do. Even then, it was hard to adjust in a different culture, to adjust in a different, because all your mental model was you grew up in a country, in a culture for 22 odd years. All of a sudden, that culture gets taken away from you in a flight, right? 24 hours ago, it took about 17, 18 hours to get to the U.S. 17 hours ago, I was a different person. I could behave a certain way. And now I have to completely shift that. I have no friends. I have no support system. I got to figure this entire world out. And I relate to that, because when I tell my girls, and I'm married to a second-generation immigrant, right? So she probably went through all the challenges that you're talking about, because we talk about often how there's an identity crisis, right? Yeah. For me, there is less of an identity crisis, because I think I am fortunate that I'm married to somebody who has gone through those pains. So she helps me with that transition. That's one part. And the second is that our starting points were very different than when her parents came from India, which was in the 60s. Right, so their challenges settling in the U.S. were very different. So when we tell our girls that we need to take you back to some of these Indian villages so you can see what life could have been if the grandpa's grandfather and grandma didn't move, and we were in India, what life you would have been exposed to versus what life you have here. But I think when you're saying that, they don't understand that world, right? Because they don't live that world. They've not. It's so concept is so abstract that be thankful for what you have, and make us proud. I don't know what that means. I have no idea what that means as a child. Can you elaborate it more? And usually, at least the response that I know I got would have gotten from my parents is, you'll figure it out. And they don't know how to articulate. What was your, when you were growing up, did you know what make us proud mean?
No, I didn't. I just understood at some point that it was also related to a certain title or, you know, it was, I think the generation of our parents, everything is connected to what others think, what their friends or family. So it's not, it was not based on what they felt or what they thought. It was based on what
somebody else,
the community thought. So I understood that at some point. And, you know, when I had to go, you know, to university, they told, actually from a young age, they told me you need to become a doctor. And I really thought that was the only option I had. You know, and
is that a pretty common thing for Ethiopians to become doctors? Because it's very common in the Indian community.
It's common for any nation, let's say a developing country especially, because it's still looked at this, you know, it's a status thing.
Prestige, yeah.
I think especially doctors these days, they don't even, I wonder if they do it because they love the job. It's really like a status thing. Yeah. It became the status.
Yeah.
Like having that doctor sign or name in front of your own name is just something like, you know, I went to medical school and I think it was literally the highlight, and there still is, to tell people like, oh, my daughter went to medical school. She's a
definitely
doctor, you know?
Definitely.
I think that's it. Even though I'm not interested in become, it's just not my thing. I'm not interested in that title, I'm not interested in that job, I'm not interested in any of that, actually. I did it to make you proud, which I did, and that's it. That's the end of it.
Did you go to the medical school all the way? Oh my God, so you're not even just all the in. I skipped that part in the intro because I had no idea you were.
So, no, also, just, so you have to imagine, like, I went to medical school, but I never finished, because, you know, specializing in a, you know, as a doctor, you have to specialize. I just went to that school, got my bachelor's, and I was done. Specialized because I still don't know where my degree is, because as soon as I got that degree, I was like handing it over to my parents. Here you are. Here you go.
You can be proud of me now. I'm done.
You can be proud of me. Now it's time to chase my own dreams. And that's how it went.
So what was that dream, Kanessa? Tell us more about it. So as you were going to the medical school, at some point, either going before going into the medical school or after, you realized that this is not the life you want to live, because you're living somebody else's life.
No, it was not. Although I must admit that, you know, it never hurts to go to a school. I'm not a big, at least in this economy, I'm not a big supporter of, you know, just following the school structure. There's way more out there than just, you know, that. But I am grateful for the knowledge, because I still use it in my daily life. Whenever my kids are sick, I know what's going on.
Yeah, that's true.
And I also know when my husband is just overreacting. So that's really, really.
Well, I think Kanessa, you don't need a medicine degree for that. All wives know when the husbands are overreacting.
I just want to throw that one in there.
Yeah, I'm sure he's listening to it. At some point, he'll listen to it. He's like, what? So, Kanessa, I'm pretty sure your husband is listening out somewhere. He's listening to this show. And if not, he should listen to it.
So, just to, in case you're listening, I know, okay? That's all I'm saying. I know when you're over there.
Which is most of the time. I'll just add to it.
Yeah. He actually told me at some point, like, as if, you know, I think it's a common thing that husbands, or when you're married, you tend to not take each other that seriously. So he tried to convince me that the men flu is worse, and he came with studies and all these reports, and I was like, wow, he goes all this, you know, way out
point.
Of his way basically to just, you know, convince me that whatever I learned at school was incorrect.
I love that. So, all right, Kanessa, so let's go back to your story here. So you were in medical school. Yes, you see the advantages of that, but that was not the career you wanted to build. When did you have that realization? Before going to medical school or during medical school?
It was during medical school, actually. Actually, I knew from the beginning that this was not something I wanted to do for, you know, the rest of my life, because there was an expiration date to it. You know, I knew the end of the whole, you know, being doctor thing. I knew that this was just what I had to do the rest of my life. So I knew this was not going to happen for me. So during my studies, my professor asked me to write a paper, and I was already an intern, and he told me, go back to the hospital, find a problem that you can solve. And study that, I had just, do the whole research and write a paper. I said, okay. Yeah. I went back and I noticed the first thing as a problem that, well, I found it a problem, but I noticed that, you had doctors, mostly male doctors, and yeah. you had the rest of the staff, the assistants,
the nurses, the team, basically, yeah.
they were female. And I noticed that females always struggled to, find that balance when it comes to home and work life. Every time there was some, mostly the females were the ones that had to stay home when the kids were, if a kid right. was sick, dog was sick, whatever it was, if there's anything happening at home, it was the female that had to sacrifice her.
Correct.
Job. So I thought, okay, but why isn't there something that would allow her to connect from home? Because in case of, the nurses, they mostly called patients to tell them right. results or anything. The assistants, they also had a lot of, their work was computer related or right. also on the phone. So I was like, part of this work, part of this job could be done from
could
home.
Be done.
So I said, okay, that's it. I have to find a way to connect this, make this connection. It was in my head, it was very simple. Yeah. I just needed to redirect the phone, basically the calls. And I had to find a way to make them log in into the computer system right. from home. Sounds so simple, but it wasn't, I had to deal with laws and regulations, and I was just 20 here.
Yeah. Technologically, you knew what you were doing, right? Technologically, it was
yes.
simple.
Yes.
But it's the process.
Was simple.
Yeah.
And I think I wrote it down, and the first time I gave it to my professor, he was like, Nessa, can you please do more research? Because it's cool and all, but he gave it back. And that's when I started to do research, and that actually transformed into a real company. It was a real product at some point, because I talked to I talked to lawyers, I talked to insurance companies, I talked to all these people that were involved in a medical system, and I was scared. I was scared because I was 20. I had no idea what I was doing. I had no idea how to behave, and it was from my looking at my background, my humble background, I never dealt with people in suits. Nobody right. told me how to deal with people in suits.
Right.
They were scary. I had to respect them. That's how, that's what I knew.
Right.
But I managed to actually turn it into a company, and eventually I also managed to sell it for quite some amount within the first 2 years. And a big insurance company basically bought my idea.
Congratulations, Kanessa. And you saw the value, why am I doing this? Let me just solve more medical problems by technology.
Looking back, I could have done that, but dealing with law and, there was no winning here, because correct. I was going correct. Up against big giants when it came, corporate giants here. And it wasn't worth it. So I think eventually they bought the idea to silence me, which was, it's fine.
So they killed the idea?
Yes, they never pushed it through.
That's painful.
They also made me sign that I wouldn't,
restart something. Yeah.
And, at that time, I had no idea what I was signing. I had no idea what I was doing. Even the money they paid me, I'm sure I could have gotten more. But I didn't have the proper guidance at that.
But that's coming from the background, if you just reflect on that for a second. Coming from as an Ethiopian refugee to selling a company to somebody you were intimidated by, that's a huge accomplishment. Money aside, you could have made more money, but the mental barrier that you crossed and the lessons that you learned in that journey, I can only imagine you're reaping the benefits of that 100x more right now. because it made you believe in something, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I went from being this just your everyday student, you know, I was super insecure. I had I've never dealt with large amounts of money ever. Right. And I lived off 900 euros, which was quite a lot for a student. But that's because I worked as a nurse part-time, and I had 900 euros or 1,000 euros a month, and I had to pay my rent. I had to pay, which was cheap back in the days.
Right. Not anymore. Not anymore. But yeah.
So I had to pay all, I had bills to pay, and I think I lived off 200 euros a month, which was okay back then, which was not bad for a student. And I went from that to having over a million, you know, euros on my bank account.
On your bank account.
It was a 1 week. Time
to party. Time to party, right? Yes. Spend it all.
No. Yeah, so, but that was my initial idea. I'm lucky that I have, you know, my parents who helped me manage that money, especially my dad. He was very smart. And I also met my now husband, and he's an accountant. And,
that helps.
You know, my father was like, okay, you know what? Just give me half of the money. I'll set it aside. And you do what you want with the rest of the money. And
that's a good idea.
Yeah, I'm happy that he did that, because I'm sure that if he didn't do that, I'm sure it was all gone by now.
Yeah, because I think, let's talk about that for a second. So your parents felt that you can only make them proud by being a doctor. Now you completed the degree, you got that college degree out of it. But then instead of, as a doctor, it would have taken you maybe a decade to get to £1 million if you ever got there. And here within the first 2 years, you got £1 million or euros or whatever the currency was. I can't remember the currency at that point. What did they feel? How did they talk to you about you don't need to become a doctor anymore? Or you have made us proud? Or they still wanted you to become a doctor?
I did both. Actually, I did both in my defense. So they can still call me doctor if they would like to. I just never worked as a doctor.
Got it.
So I, in my defense, I saved many lives at parties. So, you know, every time people
the CPRs much, that you I have to life, give. So. Yeah, that's good. So you're using it. You're just not charging for that service. You're just using it.
Yes.
I like that. Yes. I like that. So when somebody says, is there a doctor? Are you qualified to say I'm a doctor?
Luckily, not anymore. There was actually, there's this law in certain countries that if you have the degree that you have to help in case of emergency. If you don't, it's a criminal offense.
Oh, wow.
That's why I did it, because honestly, right now, my license expired, luckily, because sometimes I feel like, you know, this is just stupid. You drank way too much. You go save yourself.
Correct.
But, you know, I grew up, at some point I moved to Amsterdam, and, you know, the party scene is insane there. People know also about Amsterdam, you know, the drug scene is quite heavy. So every time I went to parties, I saw people black out, like crazy black out. So, and people did, it was hard to just stand there and see people do certain things that didn't make sense. So I knew the tricks how to get someone out of, you know, a blackout, because
that helps. I need to go party with you. That's what you're saying. Don't go party without a doctor.
It's always safe. At least I'll save your life.
Well, next time I'm in Dubai, I'll let you know. Or next time you're in the US, let me know. We'll go party.
I would suggest to touch any drugs
in Dubai, though. Awesome. Well, Kanessa, let's go to the forward journey from there. So you got you're rewarded for the effort you put in by the sale of your company. Yeah, things could have gone much differently, as in your money and everything else. You could have made more money and all. But what was the next step for you? Where did you go from there?
You know, I spent half of my money, and at some point, my dad, you know, I bought cars. I thought I was it, you know.
Of course.
A million euros is so. It was a lot.
It's a lot of money.
In the real world.
Yeah.
So my dad just watched me spend it. Probably he was aching inside, but he just let me spend it. And I bought a Porsche, and at some point he's like, Kanessa, you know, you cannot afford that Porsche because it's not a recurring income. You're not able to, you know, pay
love that
for it. practice for it. At some point, you have to realize that you have to reinvest.
Right.
And he was right. I wasn't able to pay for the Porsche at some point, so I had to sell it.
Mm.
And it was kind of because I bought the Porsche to show everyone, like,
of course,
who I am, you know, because, you know, from the environment that I came, it was a lot. But it was also an embarrassment to sell it. That's how I saw it back then. It's not how I look at it right now. So I sold it, still got, I think, more than half. And my dad was like, why don't you repeat the process? You find a problem. See if you can solve that problem or, you know, fill that gap again. And that's what I did. I basically looked for gaps in the market constantly and started to, you know, find the proper way to fill that gap. And one of the things was American football. At some point, I was so obsessed with American football. I wanted to play and become the best American football player all of a sudden. And there was no female team in the Netherlands or in Europe, actually. And I found out that there was a male team in Amsterdam. So I contacted their head coach. I said, you know, I want to do this.
It's a male team?
Male team. So okay. Men playing team. American football. So that was already there established and all. So I said, what are my options? I asked the head coach and he's like, well, you can play with us. I was like, no, that's not going to happen.
Okay.
How can I play as a girl? And he said, well, you can go to the US or you can find some girls, you know, other girls who are just as interested as you are, and I'll teach you the game and that's it. You can take it off your bucket list. So the video that convinced me, you know, that, you know, I was totally hooked. That video I posted on Facebook and I asked, are there any girls that would want to try this with me? And that video went viral and I got so many girls, you know, showing same interests. So we hosted our first tryout in Amsterdam, but I also got a lot of requests from Rotterdam, which is the second biggest city.
Yeah.
And in that same year, we established a team. Well, I established a team in Amsterdam and Rotterdam. We played. And I thought that was it.
Wow.
That was it. I was like, okay, we did it. Thank you.
Right.
Bye. And I was ready to move on with my life. But then people were like, you put in all this work. We are here now. You know, you cannot just stop. And I think in the 3-4 years after that, I built 7 more teams. It turned into a whole league. Just, you know, so, you know, 7 teams in the Netherlands is quite big.
That is quite big. The country is very small. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And, you know, we were ready. We were actually already international. We playing international against, you know, other countries, like international teams. And we were ready to expand internationally. But then COVID happened. And that was the moment when I decided, okay, this is enough. You know, I am a founder, not a CEO. And when the company turned too political, you know, when you have to deal with all layers of, you know, like a company or people, that's when I decided I will step out, sell my shares, and that's it.
So the leagues are still running?
Yes.
Awesome. So now, Kanessa, now you have had 2 exits. One to a different, I think both were different exits. One was to your partners and the one was the company. How did the clothing brand happen now? Which is moving.
So the clothing brand, actually, I've been plus size my whole life. And I never thought it was actually, there was a term for it, plus size. Because I just thought, you know, I was chubby, I knew that. But never saw it as a problem because I didn't know what it was like to be thin. I was never that. So, you know, American football, one of the reasons why I loved American football is because it allows bigger people to play as well on the line.
Definitely.
For example. So I noticed girls who were playing line women were just so, like, they had a hard time finding clothes. And me as a plus size, I was also powerlifting. I loved strength. Obviously, that's why I also love football. So I was just struggling to find proper gym wear. And at some point, I got pregnant. I was pregnant with my first baby and I was gaining weight. And I was, before the pregnancy, I was already extra large. And that was literally the biggest size that you can get in the stores back then in Europe. Right. And I was like, okay, that's it. I was gaining weight during my pregnancy. I said, my clothes don't fit me anymore. And I have nothing. I'm not going in my husband's sweatpants. And, you know. So that's basically how, during maternity leave, how I came with the idea, like, okay, maybe I can create clothes for myself so I can go back to the gym. And that's what I did. I made clothes for myself. That's it. It was not for retail or anything. But then other plus size women started to notice and they were like, what is this? How did you get this? And you know, how can we get your product? And it's how it started. And now we're selling crazy. In over 10 countries.
That is crazy story, Ganessa. That is crazy because I think it's embracing your body is very important. And I've been overweight my entire life as well. I don't know what it means to be thin either. So not that I have a problem with that. I'm very comfortable with that. There's no issues in that. Now, I think that that's a problem that's, at least in the US, it's less because I think here we go to triple XL, not just double XL, maybe quadruple XL, because I think there's just that body type is available here. But in Europe, you're right. I think clothes are much more trimmer, right? And the sizes are...
They at least at that point. The industry.
Oh, they are. Okay.
But it's not like the US.
So now tell us about that brand a little bit more. How did you expand from building it for yourself to 10 countries? That's insane.
Yeah, it was. I just tapped into a market that it's high demand. I still, hope one day that other brands will, tap into this market because, there are big people out there.
There are, definitely, definitely. Like some by choice and some by, because that's a condition they have, right?
Yeah, but it's just like the retail industry sometimes treats them as if they don't have money or they don't have buying power or I don't know what it is, but they're always left out while majority of, we're slowly heading to 50% of the population, world population being overweight. So it's not a small group or it's not a minority anymore.
Right.
So I think I just tapped into the right market. But now I'm slowly shifting also to, because the manufacturing company that manufactures my clothes, I bought it during COVID because they were suffering.
My God, look at you. I love your story. It keeps getting better. I mean, I think you're done with the surprise. You surprised me. I just bought the manufacturing company. Love it.
Yeah, I bought the because it was COVID time, and they said it's true what they say when I don't know. There's a saying
when one door closes, the other door.
Yes.
Yeah, I think what do they say? At least in the U.S., they say one man's trash is another person's treasure.
Yeah,
which is my treasure. Basically that they couldn't hang on to it. And you were able to help them as well. It's not just you were opportunistic. You're able to help them because they at least cashed out some.
Yeah, but in terms of business, that saying is how it works. It would be crazy to just wait for a moment where everything is, the price is at the highest and buying, it doesn't make sense. So you wait for this moment, you wait for a crash or if you wait for a moment where you can step in. And in a way, take advantage is negative, but basically it is you take advantage of that opportunity.
Correct. And it's not your fault they couldn't sustain the business. It's just a matter of, it's not like you forced them into there. That's how they got into it.
Yeah. So basically, I bought a manufacturing company and now slowly we are rolling more into or leaning more towards manufacturing for other brands, exactly for the reason that I just told you, like there's a big gap and I cannot fill that gap by myself. So I thought, I might as well help others create their own brands and labels and manufacture for them.
And, any of the brands you will know, are you able to share their names?
Well, it's this process. I just started it like 2 months ago. So I have a couple, so we have white labeling. In the US, there are a couple boutiques. So it's not like major brands, but boutiques that sell our clothes. Well, it's not my clothes. It's just you know, the basic leggings, they put their own logo on it and they sell
it. Yeah, 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 yeah.
But now we started really like manufacturing. When you have a design, we can make that design for you. But I also offer the mentorship part where I teach them from A to Z how they can establish
love that
brand, love that. And we manufacture for them as well.
And Kanessa, is that offering that you have for mentorship, is that for people that are the brands that you're working with, or that mentorship is available outside of just the clothing line? Let's say if I were to come to you tomorrow, is that mentorship open to that as well?
Yeah, it's for anyone. It's for anyone.
Love that.
And that's exactly what I'm doing right now. You know, I for me, you know, I got everything I wanted. I am 33. I am a mom. I have an amazing life, marriage. Everything is going so well. And at some point, it's not guilt, but it's a feeling that this luck is not just meant for me alone. So yeah. Slowly I'm trying to transition into sharing that luck with others, because it's not rocket science, but it is if you don't know the way, your way into, you know,
right,
that field. So I'm trying to just help people navigate in that world and hope that others succeed, because how much more can I ask? How much more can I, you know, I don't think it's fair for me to just keep on wanting more and more without involving others.
Right.
Sharing my luck, at least.
No, definitely. As Kenna says, this is a personal question, so feel free to answer, to say you're not willing to. But is your husband also involved in your business right now?
No, he's not necessarily involved, although I get free advice from an accountant.
Love that.
I mean, that's the least he can do and not charge. You know, that he would never charge.
Especially with all the overreactions that you have to put up with.
Yes. So, but I do, my husband is Dutch. He's, you know, Caucasian. And I'm very honest when it comes to, they are just privileged. And they have certain privileges that I never had, or I was never aware
that they were so privileged. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm really glad you brought that up, because sensitive topic. But since you brought it up, let's go, if you have time and you're willing to go there.
Yeah, sure.
I'd love to go a little bit deeper on that, because I don't think, especially as a Caucasian male or female, doesn't matter, there are certain privileges that come inherent, right? Doesn't mean it's good or bad. It's really what you do with them. It's going to make you good or make it good or bad. Privileges are good. I would love to have privilege. Just because somebody else's doesn't mean I'm going to complain about it. But you have to know, as a non-Caucasian in certain environments, you're going to have to knock on 20 doors while that Caucasian woman or man or would only have to knock on one door, right? So how does that tell, if you can go deeper on that, I would love to go there, because that's a very important topic as people are looking at their own.
It's not like they treat themselves or they put themselves on a pedestal. It's really the other people who treat them.
Correct.
Well, let's say if I go to any African country or Asian country with my husband, he gets the royal treatment. I literally, in some countries, I had to hold bags of people so they can take photos with him. And I was like pregnant, standing there with people's bags. Because, you know, he was just, I don't know what it is, but it's just, you know, he is seen as much bigger presence, or he must have more power, you know, my husband is a politician, so he knows how to talk. He knows how to, you know, and it's not just because he's a politician, he's also Dutch, and in their culture they are taught to be, you know, they their parents teach them to be vocal about their feelings, about their opinions. So he can shut down any conversation by verbalizing his thoughts. So he doesn't scream, he doesn't get mad, at least he won't see it. He doesn't fight, he doesn't do any of that. His, you know, he's verbally powerful. And that's what makes people think that he's very strong. They will never be able to go up against him verbally, because he can literally murder you in a conversation.
In a nice
because
way.
He's trained to do that.
Right.
So, you know, and honestly, even me, when I get angry, I cannot control my emotions. Nobody taught me to control my emotions. And guess who will lose in a situation when you express your anger, or basically, you know, you know definitely. What they say, right? When somebody is angry, you win, or you
Correct. No, I agree. I agree with that. So, Kanissa, that's actually a very interesting point. So, let's go deeper into that. So, there's two things, right? I mean, we can talk about two different attributes here. One is the way he communicates, and we'll talk about your husband because that's a good sample right now. It doesn't mean he's the only sample. Aside that, we can talk about is what's your husband's name?
His name is Remco.
Remco. Remco. Hey, Remco, if you're listening to it, cheers. Sorry we're talking about you. Nothing against you. I'm sure you're a lovely guy, but we're going to use you as our sample today. So if Remco has two different attributes, one is that he's a Caucasian male, right? And the other is he has a way to communicate, right? Do you think people are respecting him more because he has a different way of talking that maybe you or I don't have? Or is he getting more... notoriety because he is a Caucasian male?
He is confident with his skills. He has skills. So this is the verbal thing. It's just something that he's good at. So, you know, I think anybody who's verbally strong can come off quite,
right.
I don't know, not aggressive, but just, I think it makes us think twice before we answer them because, you know, they attack back. But there is, and I know this is a sensitive topic, but, you know, we went to Sri Lanka, for example, last summer, and we, you know, part of Sri Lanka was colonized by Dutch people. They basically colonized.
Right.
I can mention
India has one as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's say in Sri Lanka, and we were standing on the Dutch fort. So imagine we're Sri Lanka and I was reading all these Dutch words around me. I was like, this is crazy. You guys did. Yeah. You were crazy back then. And then somebody asked him, are you proud? You know, do you feel pride when you stand here? Mm-hmm. And I was like, and he answered, it was an honest moment. He was like, yeah, I think, you know, it's pretty impressive what my ancestors did. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. So that's how you really think, you know? So there is a sense of pride, you know, in that whole, and not pride of, you know, what they did to the people, but there is a sense of, you know, that powerfulness. They feel powerful for being able to conquer all this.
Conquer the country,
So it's actually a visual representation for them of power. And that's what makes him feel powerful. Because guess what? He was standing on a Dutch fort. People were treating him like a king there because he was Caucasian. And we are standing on, that's how I saw it. We are standing on a place that basically...
The ancestor killed a lot of people.
Them.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. I know exactly like what you mean.
I was flabbergasted.
What was his reaction to that? I mean, did you ever...
They don't care. You know, in all honesty, you know, they don't care. They don't... This is the reality. That's when I woke up and realized, like, okay, wait a minute. So they are actually... Of course, they are sorry for what happened. They're not proud of the pain that it has caused. But they conquered something. And, you know, I think they somewhere, they're not able to verbalize that out loud, but there is a sense of pride, and that's where that you know that's where I think it's that pride is translates to confidence in a way.
It does.
So everywhere they go, they're like, hey, it's us, you know.
It's kind of so interesting, Kanissa, because I think it brings me back to a conversation we were having just recently, even on this podcast. Is really, I think the company that you started in a medical school, if it didn't go the way it went, you wouldn't be as confident as today. Doesn't mean you would be less successful. It would take you much longer to get that confidence. But because you were 20 and you sold the company, and like, yeah, I was afraid of the suits, I was able to conquer that fear. And not even that, as a refugee, I was still able to make a million euros. Right?
Yeah.
So I got it. right? Something like that. I'm sure, I don't even know if you thought about that way, but that, I'm sure that yes. accomplishment changed how you felt about yourself internally.
Yeah, I think a lot of people also try to connect that part of me to my husband, you know. In a way, I cannot fully deny it. I cannot 100% deny it because he opened doors for me that I never knew that were there. It was not that, you know, I felt like there were doors anyway. It was not like
Right. You're not aware of the doors. You're not aware of the doors. Correct.
I wasn't aware of the doors. And then he opened them and I was like, what is this? I didn't know this world was even here. So, yeah. And that's exactly why I want to do this mentorship, to make people aware that, you know, there are privileges. We can knock on those doors as well if we know how to play that game. And he just taught me how certain, you know, games work. And also the verb, you know, the expressing feelings part. I learned a lot from that because he still is a respected man, apart from the fact that he's, you know, middle-aged and Caucasian, which yeah. automatically gives you certain respect.
Correct.
Apart from that, he just knows, even in his own circle, how to, you know, claim that respect. And it's all about that. He just plays that game in a smart way.
I love that, Kanessa. We gotta bring your husband on the podcast. I'd love to talk about that skill. Because I think that's a key point, right? Because I think all of us have so many baggages along with us, a lot of limiting beliefs. How we look, how we act, how we talk. I think you may not be able to change how you look. I mean, you got the color of the skin is the color of the skin is the color of the skin, period. You can't become, I and you can't become Caucasian. I mean, we can surgically, yes. but we'll never feel Caucasian, right? So that's no. That's
and
a very different
thing. They will never accept you even after surgery.
They won't. So it's completely fine. But as an immigrant, as a non-Caucasian, you can definitely change the way you talk to people. The way you're yes. expressing your emotions, right? You can definitely, I mean, I remember when I came to this country, which was 23 years ago now. God, it's been a long time. And I used to record voicemails to me and listen, how are other people thinking about me? At least growing up in India, I didn't have to do that because everybody understood me because I grew up in that culture. I can't understand me on a voicemail. How can somebody else understand me? It's not their fault. They're not opening the door. It's because they can't understand, period. I can't yes. even say when I'm leaving a voicemail, I can't even hear my name back. So I have to change. Instead of complaining, they don't understand me. Right. So that's really where I was thinking about that skill, that we can all change that one aspect of how to better articulate our conversation. It was kind of funny last night. I think I drove my daughter's nuts. My daughter was trying to tell me a story. Hey, so, you know, she asked a very interesting question. She asked the question that, Pop, why when somebody says to me, don't take too much because, but then it's in school, sometimes teachers tell me, take enough so that take more so you have enough. I'm like, okay, give me the context, right? So she couldn't. We went back and forth. And I guess I knew where she was going with it. I'm like, give me more context because that question is very broad, right? I can go in any ways. Give me more context. Give me more context. And half an hour, she's like, okay, I had 5 notebooks. I was going to take 4. So teacher said, take 5 notebooks so that I have enough notebooks. If I use 4, that's good. I can return the 5. I'm like, okay, the other part was I'm taking more food on the plate. I'm like, really, if you think about these two, one's going to get wasted if you take more food than you can eat. The other one is you'll return the notebook back. So they're two different same stuff, but you have to understand the context of the matter, right? Because it's not like you're getting mixed messages, because it is not mixed message. They're basically saying, don't waste things. That's the message they're giving you. It's just they're telling you in a different way. So where I was going with that, not that story was important, it was more that the context is very important. The words you use is very important. The emotion, the body language, and maybe your husband, I forget his name already, sorry about that.
Remco, yes.
Remco, maybe Remco grew up in an environment, this was enforced to him either by conversation or by demonstration. Maybe his parents
Is different when you never struggled, let's say. He grew up in the perfect household.
True.
So my husband is doing very well, but he never had to work for anything. Everything came to him.
Yeah.
So sometimes, you know, when we have conversations and I listen to him, I feel like he seriously, you know, what is he saying? I have a hard time understanding what his problem is, because, you know, he struggles with finding a purpose to do anything, actually. That's his...
Because he doesn't have to struggle.
He never had to struggle. You know, he grew up perfect, like, in a regular household, but there was everything, anything he asked for.
Yeah.
So, you know, from the moment he started working, he was promoted to, like, in the first year of his job, he got promoted to being, I don't know, manager or something. And I was like, first year, you know how many years it takes me to even
get
close to a manager position. So I think, you know, for him, he can literally wake up and say, okay, I'm going to do this. I want to become a politician, for example. And it happened basically within a week, because wow, he had the perfect, he knew how to present himself. So, you know, for him, he really struggles to find a purpose in life. I think it can, I had a hard time understanding this for quite some years, but now I get it. It must be very hard to have everything ready and, you know.
Yeah, because you don't, I think you said something, you said a word when you were describing your parents' life, it was drive, right?
Yeah.
That drive is no longer there, because he knows by itself that if anything, I touch,
you don't need it. You don't need that drive. Maybe if you have to, let's say, fight for a certain position, if he wants to become a president, let's say, of the United States, he might need to work harder.
Yeah.
I'm sure if he wanted to, he doesn't have to work as hard as you or me or anyone.
Definitely.
Of color.
Definitely.
So, and he will probably be praised too. So, you know, and he knows that. He knows his privilege. He knows. And
that's I think good. That can be boring. That's good. That's actually very good that he's aware of it and he's comfortable with it, because I think some people will feel very uncomfortable with that privilege. Because if you have privilege...
Well, that's the thing of... I think, I'm not 100% sure, but that's the thing of the being a Caucasian, where they act like they... Or they might be uncomfortable, but they get over it really fast. Because, you know, I told you about the doors, the opportunities. And I would lie if I told you that I never use those opportunities. Sometimes it's much easier to just send my husband for certain things. Yeah. You go do it, because I know they will not question him. And me coming in with an afro and, you know, afro hair, different hair. And, you know, I know how. I also know what people assume when they see me with him. It's not me that makes the money. Of course not. It's him.
Of course.
He is the successful one. So, yeah, it's I use his privilege. He uses mine as well. I have privileges too in certain parts of the world. So we learned how to balance that, but it taught me a lot that privilege has everything to do with the confidence that you show to
100%. I think that's really the theme of this entire conversation, right? That you cannot fight who you are physically, but you can change how you show up confidently in any situation, even though you're not aware of it, but it comes through first believing in yourself that you'll figure it out. And I think that's really where the power of mentorship comes, right? I'm so glad that you're doing something like that, because some people don't know how to deal with that unknown voice in their head, which is telling them you're not worthy, right? And if you don't feel you're
also
worthy.
I think if there's something that annoys me the most from the college community, or let's say the non-European community, is the fact that they constantly seek for their acceptance.
Approval,
The Europeans are not there to accept you. They don't care. Why should they?
You know,
and actually, let's be honest, they are interested in other cultures as well. But they're not, people are not original. They just are there every time they see a group of Caucasian men. They want to be accepted by them.
100%.
Well, the Caucasian men are there to learn something new as well. They want to see the original you. If you're there dressed in Indian attire, being your authentic self and be like, hey, look at me being cool. Do you know where I come from? My grand ancestors went through this and this. They're so, you know, and look at me now today. They would respect that instantly. And they would never ask you to change. But here we are, all these people coming from all sides of the world, trying to be like them, like, you know, living this European lifestyle and getting mad for, you know, not getting that acceptance or approval from them. Well, the Europeans are not there mentally. They are not, thinking of you. They are not.
No.
They're not doing anything with that, you know, effort that you're putting into being like them. Actually, it's cringing for them, probably.
No, you're one. It's kind of like a funny you say that, because I was thinking about me. When I came here, I was so intimidated by Caucasian entity.
Yes.
I said, men or women, doesn't matter who they are. I'm like, oh, no, I can't talk to them. They're so, it's like I had an inferiority complex, right? But now I'm coaching them for businesses. I'm coaching them for investments. Yeah. I'm like, it's fine. It's no big deal. They're good friends of mine. We hang out, we drink beer, we go out, and it's perfectly fun. They're just normal human beings. The only difference was I wasn't confident that I belonged. But when that changed, they changed. Or they actually stayed the same. My relationship with them changed. Because they became more to the point. Before, I wasn't bringing anything of value to them. Now, I'm bringing a completely different person. They don't even know how to behave around me sometimes. Like, how do you eat a bread, Saket, in India? I'm like, you take this and take that. Oh, I'm eating like a pizza. I'm like, they're interested. They're intrigued. So they're learning, but you have to be comfortable in your own skin to do that.
Yeah, and that's the difference. You know, they don't seek your acceptance. They're not seeking your acceptance. They just learn from you.
Correct.
You know, maybe. They learn from what you do if they're interested, but they're not there to seek any acceptance. And that's what makes them so powerful. And here we are, scared of them. You know, intimidated and everything, trying to be like them. And it's just what do you imagine if I would do this to you, Indian? Like, I come as an Ethiopian dressed in Indian attire, being like, copying your accent, copying your lifestyle. You'd be like, what is this girl doing? You know?
Yeah, yeah. No, you're 100%, 100%.
It's all about you showing who you are. Just stay there, stay where you are, stay who you are. Nothing's going to change. Doesn't matter how much you change physically. Yeah. It's not going to get you to where you think you're going.
Right. Well, Kanessa, I think we may have to record another episode just on that topic because there's so much in it, so much in it. And maybe we'll bring one Caucasian person to give their opinion, either your husband or our common friend now, Brooke. Maybe we'll bring them in there so we can have a panel round to hear their perspective as well, because we could be an echo chamber here, right? We're just hearing our own perspectives. So maybe we'll do a conversation around that so we can hear their views of how they feel about what we're saying.
I think if you listen carefully, and that's what I did. I mean, I've been
married to him.
Yeah. My husband. I had no other option than to listen. So if you listen, it really makes sense. Because this society silenced them doesn't mean they don't think or feel anything about the past. It's only the victim side that we're hearing. But, you know, they have a story as well. They just don't tell you. And don't think that when you silence, even if they would be, you know, racist, because that's how they're being portrayed if they speak their mind. Even if they are, let them be, because you want to know. Believe me, if somebody hates you, you want to know.
You want to know.
Don't silence them.
No. Yeah, no, you're right.
You want 100%. To protect yourself. In order to protect yourself, you need to let that other person speak. Just because it hurts your feelings doesn't mean you have to silence them.
Kanessa, on that powerful note, we're going to shift our show towards the end of our section here. I do want to ask one question. So if you go back to your, let's ask a question differently. There's a 20-year-old Kanessa listening to the show. What's one advice you're going to give to that person who is confused, who is looking for identity, who has a similar background, let's say an immigrant background, we won't label a country, and try to fit in? What's one message and one insight, one message of...
The only thing that is holding you back is fear. And fear comes in many ways, by the way. Insecurity, doubt, whatever it is that you're feeling, it's holding you. So your brain tells you you want that, but then your feelings all of a sudden protect you, which is a normal thing, but it's a protection mechanism that we have. But it's just fear. It's just fear. It's just an emotion. That's it. It's not reality.
Love that. Love that. And Kanessa, the next one is, as you reflect back on your life and people around you, where do you feel humanity as a whole has a gap right now? Where should humanity as a whole, where's the gap in the humanity? Where do humans have to improve and migrate towards?
You know, I think I was scrolling through Reddit the other day, and the question was in this group, what is something that is so easy but people fail to do? Somebody said, respect each other. That's it.
Wow.
Why is it so hard? Why is it? That's the only thing you have to do. Listen to someone and be like, that person thinks differently. But okay.
Yeah, I think the judgment. Because judgment's the easiest thing. And the judgment is there's no respect.
Has nothing to do with you. You can just say, that's different, but okay.
I love that. That's different, but okay. Maybe that's a tagline for life. I love that. Kanessa, last two questions. One of them is going to be, we've talked over an hour right now. Is there anything that you believe we didn't touch on that you feel our audience is going to benefit from?
I think we discussed most of the things. The only thing I would like to add to my story is don't buy a Porsche. Meaning don't flex, you know, don't buy a Porsche to flex.
Correct.
You know, buy it if you want to enjoy it. Because if your drive is to, you know, show others how good you're doing, you're going to end up hurt or broke because people will never approve. Actually, the opposite happens. They're going to talk trash about you.
Yeah.
And they will never give you that approval, which means you are constantly chasing for that, you know, imaginary approval that's never going to come. So it's going to drain you. So if you buy that Porsche, make sure you buy it for yourself to enjoy life. And the best drive that I had was being able to live a life where you never have to worry about money anymore. So, you know, when my parents, I retired my parents, which is a great thing. You know, I travel anywhere, anytime. I take my kids to any, I don't know, fancy world, whatever there is. They just see it online and, you know, the week after we can go. You know, that freedom, that is a drive. But yeah, we cannot show that on social media. The fact that I can call a lawyer in any crisis, it's not something that I can show off on social media, but it is the biggest flex that I have.
Yeah, and I love that, right? I love that because what you're doing is before you were chasing the approval, now you're chasing the true freedom. True freedom is you have the resources and the money to do whatever you want to, right?
Yeah.
And I'm very certain the same people are now looking for your approval. People that you were looking for approval from at that time, right? Because you have changed the game. You've changed the game by not following that, and you didn't care for them at that point. So again, congratulations on all your success, Kanessa. This is amazing. Thank you for adding so much insights and so much value to our audience. I learned a lot just from one fellow immigrant. A crazy success story, which is great in such a short amount of time. And a raw open dialogue about what's real in the world. I think that's one thing that we don't do enough, which is having real conversations about what's happening in the world. People are different physically, mentally, emotionally, and you have to live in that world. You can't shy away from
it. And that's okay. That's okay.
That's okay. Correct. Yeah. So thank you again. And our listeners, I want to thank you. If you're listening to this part, that means you stayed with us till the end. So appreciate that. Kanessa, where can people find you?
If you Google my name, you can probably find me anywhere. I try to be active on all platforms, which is very challenging, by the way. But I'm most active on Instagram, Kanessa Mulune. You can find me there. You can also find Mulu all in my bio. So that will be the easiest. So if you... any platform, Kanessa Mulune, you'll find me. But I'm most active on Instagram.
Awesome. Well, Kanessa, we'll make sure it's included below. Thank you again, Kanessa.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. If you got value from this episode, you might consider sharing this content with a friend. But most importantly, be sure to take action on what you've learned. One way you can take the next step is to connect directly with Socket on an investor call. That link is waiting for you in the show notes below.